The Zamzos Garden Show is sponsored by Zamzos. The views, opinions, and advice offered by the show's hosts do not necessarily reflect those of KBOI or its parent company, Cumulus Media. KBOI makes no representations as to the accuracy of the information expressed and shall not be responsible or liable for any claims arising out of the use of or reliance upon any such information.
What kind of seeds are you sowing? Why is it so green where you're from? It must be Zamzos growing in your yard, garden, or barn. You've done it right, you see it. Got the help that you needed. Zamzos really makes you want to come home.
I'm coming home,
'cause nobody knows like Zamzos.
News Talk 670 KBOI. It's the Nobody Knows Like Zamzos Garden Show on News Talk 670 KBOI. To be a part of the show, call now 1-800-529-KBOI or 336-3700. It's the Nobody Knows Like Zamzos Garden Show on the Big 670 KBOI.
Good morning, everyone. It is the Zamzos Garden Show. I am your host, Nolan Guthrie, and really excited to be in studio again with Enoch Lopez from our Water Tower store. Thanks for coming in again, Enoch.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone.
It was just a couple of weeks you were on for the first time, and here you are again, right back at it.
Exactly.
So thank you again for coming in. It's just a beautiful day outside, just absolutely gorgeous. So I'm sure the stores are busy today, hopefully, and we got some people out wanting to get in the yard and get some stuff, get some work done.
Absolutely, everybody's excited to coming in, getting the right stuff, and getting ready for spring.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is a beautiful day, and I'm sure many people are at the Boise Flower and Garden Show, which is going on right now over at Boise Center on the Grove, and Zamzos is there again, as we have been for many years, and you can still get your coupons, your discount coupons, if you're heading to the show. There's probably a Zamzos close by on the way, so pop in and pick up your lawn food and grab a coupon, and come have a great time at the show. I was there yesterday. I taught the, I did a soil seminar. And it's just as beautiful as it is every year. So looks really great in there. So, and if you're gonna go to the show tomorrow, I will be there also doing a seminar on trees, some basic tree care stuff. So if you're going to the show tomorrow, be sure to stop by and say hi. I'd love to meet people. I like meeting people that listen to the show. It's really nice and fun. So that seminar is at 1:45 tomorrow. I did the soil seminar yesterday. So Boise Flower and Garden Show is always a great time. It's very fun. Have you ever been there, Enoch?
I have not. This will be my first year and be volunteering tomorrow.
Yeah. So, yeah, you'll come by and see Enoch as well. Are you going to be there in the afternoon or the morning?
In the morning.
In the morning. Very good. Right on. So I might catch you as you're leaving.
Absolutely. I'm hoping to gonna enjoy your show too. I'm gonna try to make it.
All right. Well, that'll be cool. Hopefully, I won't disappoint anybody. Yesterday's seminar went pretty well, I thought. So we'll see how it goes tomorrow. We've already got a phone call, so let's go and talk to Connie in Meridian. Connie, how's it going? How can we help you today?
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
Boy, do I need help.
All right.
Say, I would love to try and grow sweet potatoes this year.
Yeah.
And I would really like to know mostly is on the soil temperature that they need to grow in and if that has to stay constant 24 hours a day.
It doesn't have to stay constant, but preferably with sweet potatoes, I think they need to be a little bit warmer than like the regular potatoes that we would grow around here. So you want it to be probably closer to like 50, 55 degrees, and like it can dip a little bit. That's totally fine. It's just a matter of the way they measure soil temperature over 24 hours is actually an average. So if the top is, 55 and the bottom is 53, because it's not going to change a ton, that's an average of 54 and you're good to go. So
I was going to put them in pots, big big, big pots.
Sure. Yeah, you can definitely do that. I mean, the bigger, the probably the better when we're dealing with temperature, because of the smaller, then it's going to be more inclined to shift temperatures a little bit. So if it's bigger, larger mass, it's going to be able to hold the temperature for longer.
Okay. And when do I plant them?
Boy, you know, you typically want to be a little bit later. Do you already have a source for those sweet potatoes? Or do you,
no.
Are you getting slips? Like some, there's a couple of ways you can get them. Usually they'll come in like a slip, which is, that's what they call it, which is a weird word. But it's just basically the starter plant with just a little bit of root on it. And that's pretty common. You can also sometimes get them planted, but that's usually a bit later, like closer to probably mid-April. Slips usually come in a little bit earlier. The problem is the new leaves on them are very tender, and so you really got to be careful about a frost, because if a frost gets them, then they're toast.
Well, if they're outside in April and my ground temperature isn't warm enough, can I start them inside my sunroom?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You could do that. That'd keep them nice and warm. And then just you want to make sure you kind of harden them off. I'm sure you're familiar with that term.
Yes.
Yeah, harden them off before you plant them all the way outdoors. And
okay.
Just make sure you got a cover ready. Put something over the top of them in case it's going to frost that night.
Oh, sure. Okay. Well, thank you. I'm going to attempt this, and I'm sure I'll have nothing but success.
Oh, yes, you will. Yes, you'll be vastly
because,
successful, and you'll be swimming in sweet potatoes.
Yeah, that's all. I don't allow anything else.
Fantastic. Well, let us know how it goes, Connie. I'd love to hear back from you later as you're kind of going along.
Sure.
See
all
how
right.
successful you are, right? Appreciate it.
Thanks
for the call. Yeah. All right, we've got lots of calls already, so I'm going to get this phone number out there just in case you want to be a part of the show. You can give us a call at 208-336-3700 or 1-800-529-KBOI. Right now, we have Howard in Twin Falls. Howard, how's it going? How can we help you today?
Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I'm going to change the irrigation system on my garden beds, and I'm going to go to the little tube. It's about a 3/16-inch diameter, and they got emitters that you slice in.
Yeah.
And I wonder what size emitter do I need for early girl tomato plant? Like half a gallon? A gallon?
Well, so, yeah, it's interesting. You can do really either. It's a matter of how long you're going to be able to water. Do you have any kind of water restrictions or, like, is there times when you
maximum
can't?
Three times a week.
Okay. So I would tend to go more towards a gallon then. What are you thinking on?
Yeah, 1 gallon will be the best.
Yeah. And then, if you're going to go three times a week, for something like that, I like to water tomatoes kind of a little bit heavier and then have a little bit of time to dry out. So I think that's perfect. But I would, probably go for, it's going to depend on your soil, but you're probably looking at a couple of, if it's in a gallon an hour, you're probably going to want to go for a couple hours each time.
Yeah, it's pretty good soil. I've been amending it for 15 years with compost organic matter, and it's pretty crumbly.
Yeah, that's perfect. You're probably going to want to adjust as we get hotter and cooler, so early on.
I was going to follow your suggestion on the no-till gardening, and that's why I wanted to go to this kind of system so I don't have
Oh, yeah, fantastic, yeah.
Just lay it on top.
Yeah, that's a great way to do it, and I think you'll find it, switching to a drip system is a little bit different because it's different than how we're used to watering, so you have to kind of play around with it a little bit. It's tough to say, like, this is exactly how you do it because it's going to change from place to place.
I used to use, or in the past, I've used buried soaker hose,
mm-hmm.
and that's worked well for me.
Yeah. Okay, so you're pretty familiar with it. Yeah, just play around with it. As it warms up, you're probably going to water longer and just to adjust for that temperature change in water differential. So,
okay.
All right.
All righty. Thanks for your help.
Absolutely. Thanks for the call, Howard. Appreciate it. We're just starting right out of the gate with those calls, Enoch. That's
absolutely fantastic.
I love getting calls because I ramble on about stuff all the time, and I never know if it's what people want to talk about. So if you have a question about anything out in the lawn or garden, give us a call at 208-336-3700 or 1-800-529-KBOI. KBOY. Looks like we're about time for a break, so we'll go into break and come back and answer your questions. We'll talk about some lawn and garden stuff here on the Zamzos Garden Show on KBOY.
The Zamzos. Talking with you for over 15 years, Paul, Jay, and Chris, weekday mornings on 670 KBOI.
All right, we are back with the Zamzos Garden Show. I'm your host, Nolan Guthrie, and very happy to have Enoch Lopez in studio again with us this weekend. So thank you very much, Enoch, for coming in.
Absolutely.
Appreciate having you here. Yeah. I'm going to get the phone number out real quick, 208-336-3700 or 1-800-529-KBOY if you've got any questions about the lawn or the garden. It is a beautiful day, a great day to get out and start getting some work done out in the lawn, out in the garden, getting things ready. It's too early to plant a lot of the vegetables just yet, but they'll be coming in soon. They'll be coming. Have you guys gotten anything in the stores yet? I think I've seen over at Franklin they've had a few, like some herbs and a few things. Have you gotten any?
We have strawberries. We have some herbs too.
Yeah. Yeah, strawberries would be a great one to plant today.
Absolutely.
Who doesn't love strawberries?
Exactly.
Okay, let's talk. I wanted to talk about some lawn stuff because today is a great day to just get out and start doing something. And last week I got a bunch of work done out in the front yard. Actually, I should say I did some stuff, but I tried to make my kids do as much of it as possible. So they got the lawn mowed, and it's ready for fertilizing. But now is a great time for getting some lawn food down. I noticed the canals are full, but I don't think everybody's got water yet. So that's going to be a concern. If you're wanting to get out there and start doing something, you're going to need to get water out there, so you might need to use some house water. It doesn't take much. Just a little bit. A few minutes of water is all it really needs to get kind of broken down and activated, and you'll be in good shape. But the water should be on soon. I think probably within the next few weeks we should be fully irrigated everywhere. And we've started the reminders for lawn programs. So if you're on the lawn program and you haven't gotten that, just remember that we kind of do them in stages. So we still have a few more to go out, so you still might get it. But if you ever have an issue, just talk to a manager. Come and yell at Enoch. Don't yell at me. But I'll try to fix it as quickly as I can and get you all set up. So the reminders have been coming out. Have people been coming in and picking their stuff up?
Yeah, absolutely. They have been coming in. The biggest thing is if you haven't gotten a reminder, you can call the store and you can pick it up at any time.
Yeah.
If we, especially on the weekends, we also have loaners, spreaders. You guys can come by, get out a loaner spreader, so you don't even have to have a spreader.
Yeah.
We'll provide one for you guys for 24 hours and get it going. A lot of people that have been doing is that they just look at the weather. It's been raining, so if you want to take advantage of the rain, that would be perfect timing to put down stuff. And not just the lawn, guys. Keeping the lawn healthy is one of the best things, but preventative.
Yeah.
That's another thing. We want to make sure that we prevent weeds. We prevent insects going into your lawn. Those could be not right now affecting a lot of people, but in the future, near future, very close, it could take over.
Yeah, it doesn't take long for that problem to really blow up. I mean, as soon as it's a hot day, I mean, you'll start to see those things show up really quickly. And getting that prevention down early is really key and really saves a lot of headache, because if you can get on top of that stuff early, then you can enjoy the lawn more. You don't have to worry about it constantly. And I think that's one of the things that, that's one of the things that always bugs me is, now I got to worry about it and I got to do this extra work. So it's good time to get down your crabgrass preventer. Absolutely. Right now is the time to get that going. And, the duration, the grub control.
And that is the biggest things when you do the preventative, one bag, it does up to 5,000 square feet. So, and the key is two applications, one right now, and then I would do another one in 3 months from the day you applied the first application.
Yeah, and even I think we're finding more and more people really want to consider doing a second application of the crabgrass preventer, because we've been seeing a lot of goosegrass, which is another annual grass, comes up later, but it germinates later than the crabgrass. So really consider getting that extra application of either one of those, and it'll really help you out with a lot of those issues.
Absolutely.
All right, we've got a phone call from Tom in Nampa. Tom, how's it going? What can we help you with today?
I've got a large maple tree in my yard, and it has box elder bugs in it. And how do I get rid of the box elder bugs, or do I have to take that tree down?
Yeah, actually, that was going to be my first kind of joke. The best way to get rid of box elder bugs is to get rid of the box elder. But, maple trees are actually – box elder is in the maple family, so they're drawn to the same thing. Now – they are a difficult pest because they overwinter, and that's really what happens is, you know, we get a nice day like this or a few days, and they just explode in population. You just see them all over the place. And you can do, you know, sprays. Something like the Z1 works well on those guys. I think you can even use 7 if you've got something like that. You can use that, spray down where they're at. The big key I found with preventing box elder bugs is paying attention to the bark mulch or whatever is underneath the tree, because that's where they overwinter, is actually in the soil layer. And during the winter, a lot of times if you go and kind of break up that soil, break up that mulch, a lot of times you can expose where they're overwintering and actually let the winter do a lot of that work for you, or the cooler temperatures, and stop them from that early bloom or flush in the spring.
Oh, okay, great. So I just have to take the soil out from under it. So they're not actually in the tree then?
No, not when they overwinter. They go down into the soil layer just below the tree, and that's where they overwinter and then come out and just get everywhere.
So I spray that 7 underneath the tree.
Yeah, and spray it where you see them as well, because it will give you a contact kill, but you can spray it on the other surfaces around, because that's where they're coming out, so you can kind of start to kind of suppress their populations that way.
Okay, great. Thanks very much.
Absolutely. Good luck on that one.
Thank you.
All right, we've got Michael in Eagle. Michael, how's it going? How can we help you today?
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I've got a number of flowering fruit trees like crab apples and pears, and then also some red maples. And I'm wondering about the effectiveness of spraying those to prevent a lot of those helicopters from.
You're breaking up a little bit there, Michael, but I think I understand the question. You're looking at, so you mentioned you got crab apples, you got pears. I'm going to assume those are an ornamental pear and probably not a fruit.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. And then the maples, which produce the seed pods or the helicopters. And the fruit eliminator that we sell will prevent any of those. The trouble with the maple is realizing when it's in bloom. And because they have a very small, it's a very non-showy flower. So you got to pay really close attention. They bloom very quickly. So that's really the tough part about preventing that seed from developing on the maple tree. So you got to really watch it and look for it. And they have a really interesting bloom. It kind of comes out.
Well, they just now developed the red buds.
Buds, yeah, okay.
And some of the coatings on them is falling off. You can see them on.
Okay. Yeah, so you're right at that bud break stage. So you're probably going to be due for those maples to flower really any day. So you want to have that fruit eliminator ready, and as soon as you see them, you're going to want to get them sprayed, because they do not take a long time to go from emergence to blooming and to be done. I mean, it's probably only, you know, 5 to 7 days. So you don't have a lot of time where they're full bloom where you can get that on to be effective for the maples specifically.
Okay, and if I apply it too early?
If you apply it too early, you risk it not being at full bud or full open. And so sometimes you might not get as full of control as you might hope. So, just try to be ready. You know, if you start to see it, just, you know, give it a day or so and then hit them. And you might even do a follow-up application.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Yeah, good luck with that. It's a tough one, knowing when a maple tree blooms. I mean, it's one of those trees where you're like, oh, yeah, it has a flower. I'm like, no, it doesn't. I've never seen a flower on a maple tree.
Exactly.
You know, but, yes, they do bloom. They produce a seed, so there has to be a flower at some point. They're just they're really indiscriminate about it. They're not showy offy like of a lot of other plants and trees that are out there. So, all right, we're right at another break. So let's go to break. We'll come back. We'll take your calls. We're here on the Zamzos Garden Show on KBOI.
The Zamzos Garden Show will be back right here on News Talk 670 KBOI. Live from the Next Title Studio, this is News Talk 670 KBOI.
All right, we are back here on the Zamzos Garden Show. I am your host, Nolan Guthrie, and with me today is Enoch Lopez of our Water Tower location. Enoch, how long have you moved over there just recently? I think it was just right as you were on the show last, so it's been about a month or so?
Almost 3 weeks.
Almost a month, yeah. Yes. How do you like it over at Water Tower?
Love it.
Yeah, it's a nice store. It's kind of one of the, it's a weird one because you almost don't even know that there's a Zamzos there. Unless you know, but it's a nice store. I enjoyed working there. It was years ago that I was there.
Yeah, it's a very great store to visit. You know, we are kind of having such a great, wonderful customer base and love talking to them. They have a lot of, you know, good, you know, stories and a lot of good information that we use to improve our business.
Fantastic. Yeah. So, yeah, if you haven't, if you're over there in the Meridian area, be sure to stop by and say hi to Enoch, meet him. Lots of stuff's happening. I mean, trees and shrubs are coming in, plants are coming in. It's springtime and we're ready to hit the gas and get started. So, we're talking about a few different things. We've talked about some lawn stuff. I want to talk a little bit about seeds, lawn seed in specifically. So, we're going to talk a little bit about that. But I want to get the phone calls out there or get the phone number out there. If you have any questions, you want to be a part of the show, give us a call at 208-336-3700 or 1-800-529-KBOI. So a lot of questions start to show up right around this time of year about, like, people want to start putting grass seed down. And I am I don't know if I tend to differ on with a lot of people's recommendations, but I don't know if it's part of my laziness or what, but I always tend to push things back further than what a lot of people, some people recommend. And I like to preface this as saying this is what I do. It's not necessarily always the absolute best way to do it, but it's what I do. I don't remember who it was that says I always want to hire a lazy person because they'll find the cheapest way to do something. So that's kind of how I live my life is I try to find the easiest and fastest way to do something so I can get back to doing nothing. Seeding is something that you should really consider. I mean, even if you don't have damaged areas, like even if the lawn's in good shape, it's looking good, I still think reseeding on a regular basis, at least every few years, really helps kind of revitalize the lawn. You know, that it always keeps it looking good. You get new fresh plants in there and the lawn just performs better, in my opinion, over the years. Because what I find is a lot of people, you know, they're in an established house. They've been there for, you know, 5-6 years. And the house was there for, you know, 5 years before that. So, and they've never put any grass seed down. And the thing that I always try to kind of, we want to try to relate to is if you've never put a new seed of grass in the lawn, that plant is the same plant that was planted, you know, however many years ago. It's the same plant because our grass, the grasses that we use up here, they reproduce by seed. And we cut them off before they ever get to that size, so it's an older plant. And some I always feel like they get kind of tired. We put them through a pretty rigorous, regimen of fertilizing, watering, and cutting all the time. And it's a good thing to just get some new stuff in there every now and then.
Yeah, the new growth is actually helps out. You know, just even filling areas where you have animals and dogs and cats, and you wanna refill those areas, so that would be a great thing to reseed. And even in great areas that you have beautiful lawn, like Nolan was saying, you want to add just a couple more, you know, areas.
Just a little bit. Doesn't take much. And if you haven't done it for a while too, this is another one that comes up is people want to know about thatching. And if you do a thatch in the spring is the time I recommend doing it. Get some new seed down right after you've done a thatching because You've just exposed all this soil and ripped out all this dead stuff. It's a perfect time to get new seed down. I did it 2 years ago in the lawn, and it just looked amazing. It took off. It looked fantastic. So it's a really good idea. If you're going to do the thatch, go the extra mile and put some new seed down. You will not be disappointed. We've got a phone call from Dell in Weezer. Dell, how's it going? How can we help you today?
Good morning. You were talking a minute ago about some kind of a spray to put on apple and pear trees and maple trees. What effect does that stuff have on bees? You know, bees are hitting the apple tree and the pear tree for pollen.
Yeah.
They're hitting the maple tree for nectar to make honey out of.
So there's now, from what I've read and I've seen, it hasn't had any effect on bees at all. This is not a chemical. It's not it's not a bug killer. It's not. It's really just a hormone. It's what it is. Is a growth regulator. That's a hormone that the plants already produce. So it's a synthetically. I shouldn't really speak to that. I don't know how they derive it. I don't know that chemistry. But it is just a hormone. So it's sprayed on the tree, and all it's doing is preventing the flower from reproducing, so from getting the sexual reproduction from happening. So it doesn't affect anything, and typically what it does is a lot of times it will actually close the flower up faster. So from what I've seen, what I've read about it, no population or damage to bees that I've ever seen a study on.
Okay.
But well, it is something, you know, I'm glad you brought it up, because it is something that we want to be very conscious of. Bee populations are a big deal, and making sure that we keep those guys healthy as possible is definitely something that we're always aware of. And I can tell you, if it was something that we found was shown to have an effect, we would be not recommending that product, because it is something we're very, very concerned about as well.
Okay. You also mentioned using 7 on the box elder bugs. 7 is a particularly harmful chemical for bees, because as it dries, the little particles are just about the size for a bee to pick up and take back to the hive as pollen. And so I would caution people very, very strongly that 7 is probably not one of the better insecticides to be used, because we do really need what few bees we have left around here. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a matter of timing your applications, but also applying them in the correct way. You know, you're talking about box elder bugs. You're usually seeing those on, like, the side of the house. You're seeing them on the fence. You're seeing them on the ground. Those are the places that, you know, you're going to spray for those guys. I wouldn't recommend going and spraying that 7 up in the tree. That's typically not where the box elder bugs are. And again, like you mentioned, it certainly has an effect on those bees. So I appreciate you bringing those up. There's always those things we got to think about. So appreciate the call there, Dell.
Yeah, because, you know, as you're spraying something on the side of a house, there's also the after spray that falls down on the crocuses and other flowers that the bees are working. So I would caution people very carefully about it.
Absolutely. Thanks for the call, Dell.
You bet.
All right. So, yeah, that's always a good concern, something to be aware of whenever you're spraying something like that. I mean, something like permethrin is still not as good, but it breaks down a lot faster and is probably a better long-term use, or pyrethrin. But, yeah, using any insecticide is always something you got to be careful of, especially when you're dealing with it in the spring. So, and the thing – Well, go
and
ahead.
One of the things that I will recommend is to check with the SAMHSA's employees and ask for how to apply. Also, directions. Let's just kind of look at the directions so that we can actually do it properly, so we don't cause any harm. You know, especially Dale is concerned, and it's very, very true that we need to be very conscious about it.
Yeah,
and following directions to the proper amount. More does not necessarily mean better.
Right, yeah. Absolutely. Using the correct amount is always like you said, more is not better. Use the right amount. It will be effective. And you know, there's some other things to just think about in general. I mean, the box elder bug is not a damaging pest. You know, it's not going to decimate your tree. So, you know, if they're just kind of minding their own business, you know, is it really something you need to spray for? So that's another thing to consider. Is it a damaging pest or is it just annoying?
Correct. But one of the recommendations that you gave it earlier was, you know, in the wintertime, you know,
yeah.
you won't want to, you know, rake up the bark. You want to rake up underneath the tree so that you don't get as much infestation as you would
Absolutely.
If you don't do anything about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, there's lots of different ways to skin that cat, I guess. Is that a weird? I shouldn't say that. I do not condone skinning any cats. Let's not do that. I like cats, so. All right, I think we're close enough to a break. Let's go ahead and hit that. We'll come back for part four of the Zamzos Garden Show here on KBOI in just a moment.
The Zamzos Garden Show will be back right here on News Talk 670 KBOI. We are the home for the best in national talk. Rush, Savage, and Levin on 670 KBOI.
All right, we are back for part four of the Zamzos Garden Show. We are just about finished up here. Enoch Lopez from our Water Tower store has been with us here, and I appreciate having you here today, Enoch, on this
thank you.
Beautiful spring day. Getting started, hitting the gas, getting ready for all sorts of stuff out in the lawn and the garden. So if you want to be a part of the show, we'll be able to probably get another call in or two. So give us a call at 208-336-3700 or 1-800-529-KBOI. Right now we've got Keith in Eagle has a question for us. Keith, how can we help you?
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good. I'm doing well.
Hey, I've noticed that some of my neighborhood cats like to roll around in my flower beds and do other things.
Yeah.
Would coyote urine discourage them from that?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably – I think, you know, over the years I've found that that shake-away stuff that we have that is the coyote and fox urine is hands down the best deterrent for cats in a lawn or in a garden.
Shake-away?
Yeah. The product is called – we call it shake-away. It's the one we sell, and it is a coyote, and I think it has fox urine in
yeah.
it too, which is – you know, I'm glad we're having this conversation about urine, but it is very effective. I think of the ones we sell, that's probably the one I found most people be successful with.
Will it keep squirrels away too?
You know, I don't know about that.
There's a product that we carry. It's called Repel All, and it does have listed squirrels. A lot of people have problems with the on the fence. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I have a neighbor in our subdivision that apparently she likes to feed the squirrels raw peanuts. So they come into the yard and they plant them in the lawn.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. If you've got the cats, I would definitely go with the shake away, and you might just kind of pay attention and see if you're noticing any difference. But the squirrels are so tough to really repel because. A lot of them tend to be they're smell based, right? So they got to be somewhere in the vicinity to be able to smell it. And other ones are based like if they walk on it and they get it on their paws and then they clean themselves, they get it in their mouth and then they don't want to be around it anymore. So they're really tough because squirrels just tend to jump over things. So they're just a difficult one to deal with. But I would start with the shake away, see if you're getting any results from that. It'll at least get the cats out of there. And then maybe mixing it up, trying one of like the Repels All, and I think that comes in a spray as well.
It does.
Yeah. So, I'd go.
Alrighty, well,
I'd go that route.
Well, thank you very much, and have a great day.
Appreciate it, Keith. You too. All right, let's get to Chuck in Nampa. Chuck, how can we help you today?
Oh, thanks for taking my call. I have a question about compost.
Absolutely, go for it.
I use a lot of a cow manure bagged compost.
Okay.
In fact, I use so much of it, I buy it by the pallet.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I saw the chemical composition of it, and it is alkaline. It's got like a 9.5 pH level.
Yeah, that's pretty high.
And my soil's already too alkaline.
Yeah.
Am I making a problem worse by using it?
No, not really. You're not making it any worse. You're certainly not making it better. You're not bringing it down. But if it's already alkaline, it probably was that most of our soils tend to be on the alkaline side anyway. So it's not going to really make it all that much worse. Now, it's one of those situations where the compost is really good for the lawn. It's really good for the flower bed. So it's kind of like you don't want to stop doing something that's good because it's, you know, not helping this other issue. What you may consider is adding some sulfur into your regimen. Some fast-acting sulfur once or twice a year would certainly help bring that down and probably neutralize you or get you a little closer to neutral. The thing is, if you went to, say, a manure that was still on the neutral side, then you still have a net effect of nothing, right? You're still not bringing it down that much, or if any. So you're still probably going to want to look to sulfur to really help bring that down. Does that make sense?
That does. So I could just add the sulfur when I apply the compost.
Yeah, you could do it that time, or, you know, give it a few weeks, however much work you want to do at one time. But yeah, absolutely.
Okay, that's fantastic.
And I want to just throw one thing out there too, Chuck, for you. Since you're dealing with pH, it's a good idea to have something. I don't know if you already do this. Maybe you do. But have something that you can test it regularly, either a pH probe meter or having like the little vial test kits. So that way you can test before and after and see what kind of net effects you're getting. Because whenever you're dealing with pH, I really don't want people to go into that blind. You want to know what you're dealing with and what you're changing. And then that after you do it a few times, you start to see kind of the net effect of your works, and you'll be able to adjust.
And do they have those test kits? Where do I get those?
We have them.
Yeah, we have those at Zamzos. And you've got the electric ones.
We do. We have the electric one. We have the test kits. We have the single vial. Just come by and then we'll help you. We also have the sulfur. We have the fast-acting sulfur too,
right,
that you can use, and we'll direct you.
Yeah, if it's something you're watching regularly, I would really recommend going with the electric one. It's a little bit more upfront, but it will last a lot longer, and it's kind of like you can test it on the fly. So you don't have to wait. The test kit vial things, they take a little bit of time to kind of change up. So you'll net, it'll be a lot cheaper for you to just go ahead and get the electric one.
Oh, that's a fantastic idea. Thank you.
Yeah, you got it. Thanks for the call. Really good one. Let's see. I think we just got a little bit more time. So let's talk about, we were talking about some grass seed before. And Enoch, one of the things, I didn't quite get to it, but when do you typically recommend putting the seed down to sow out in the lawn?
One of the recommendations I have is maybe when the temperature is consistently say 55 degrees.
Yeah.
You just want to allow it to grow. If it's too cold, it's not going to just sit there. It's just not going to do anything. Same thing if it's too hot. It won't do anything. It will just sit there, you know, slowly moving along.
Yeah.
The other thing to keep in mind, too, is when you're seeding, you want to cover it with something a little bit so that you can, like a compost on top of it, just to make sure that, one, it has some moisture to keep, two, they don't blow away, and the birds.
Right.
Birds love, you know, grass seed.
Yeah, it's an expensive bird seed for sure. So, I typically like to recommend mid-April.
Yes.
A lot of people go on too early, and like you said, if it's too cold, it's just not going to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a longer chance for, like, the birds to get to it, for the seed to rot, for it to not do its thing. So it's not going to come up until later anyway. So I like to wait till about mid-April. My concern is if it does warm up enough to where that seed does start to germinate and we get a frost, you've got a good chance of killing off all those new, fresh cotyledons that just came out. So putting it on mid-April, the timing of it puts it right about to the time where you're at last frost and you're out of
correct.
You're through it. So, all right, that is all the time we got. Enoch, thank you for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Some time with us today. And I think we are all done. I will talk to you guys next week here on the Zamzos Garden Show on KBY.